Jackal met the quartermaster's stare. Just that the bastards start paying for Quim. No more free thrusts as part of our protection bargain. The bandages along the claymaster's jaw bulged as he grit his teeth. Polecat and Rounth issued wordless sounds of disgust. Grocer's expression could have soured wine. Jackal raised a placating hand. That arrangement had to end anyway. Some of the girls were starting to resent it. The claymaster slammed his good hand down on the desk.
The girls? What kind of cockless maggot is Sancho that he's worried about what a bunch of whores think? Or is that your own sympathies coming through, Jackal? I know you're all but wed to that red-haired hussy. Got her gagging for your mongrel meat. You looking to her needs instead of the interests of this hoof?
Jackal shook his head, opening his mouth to answer.
Don't you say a fucking word,
the claymaster warned, thrusting a distended finger outward.
You throw me a half-empty bag of coin before ensuring me it's going to go back to proper weight. Then you say some of that weight is going to be our own shine coming back to us because we have to start paying for cunny? And we might have to start watching out for reprisals from the Castile, all because you three...
The finger jabbed at Jackal, Oates, and Fetching.
Couldn't keep from killing some arrogant frail so fresh from the north that he still smelled like incense from his father's fucking manor? Which one of you actually ended him?
Jackal felt his teeth grinding. He heard Fetch take a breath. That cavalero struck a gray bastard, he said, before she could speak. And he did it in front of a half-dozen other noble brats new to the lots. Do you want tongues to wag that a rider from this hoof can be chastised by some blue blood? Do you want the Tynes hearing that? What about our brother hoofs? We cannot be cowed by his Spartan gentry, chief.
Damn right, came Hoodwink's soft voice from the far end.
Jackal did not risk a glance at the others, but the table was silent.
No, we can't.
The claymaster agreed, his voice thick with anger.
But as leader of this hoof, I also cannot allow my riders to make choices that might bring blood we are not ready to shed or spill. Now, which one of you killed the cavalero?
Who do you think? Jackal replied.
I did.
Next to him, he felt Fetch's entire body go taut. She was angry, just as Jackal knew she would be, but she was no fool, and did not question or contradict his lie in front of the hoof. The claymaster's head slumped slightly.
Looks like you're going to be nursemaiding the slopheads for a while, Jack.
Jackal seethed. He stared at the claymaster, his jaw so tight it began to throb. They had done the right thing. Protected the reputation of the hoof, and now he was to be punished for it? Jackal felt his hand drifting across the table to the axe in front of him. He would cast against the chief's decision. Surely the rest would back him. Just then, the doors of the chamber were thrust aside. A slack-jawed hopeful stood in the jam, his wide eyes darting uncertainly around the room.
Hells! Say their name and one fucking appears, the claymaster groaned. What do you want?
The slophead jumped at the chief's tone.
Riders returned, claymaster, the slop stammered. Scouts from Badayat Hill.
Out with it, the claymaster said. What do they report?
The slophead's mouth went up and down ineffectually a few times before he finally got the word out.
Fix!
Chapter 3 Jackal sat astride Hearth, waiting with the rest of the hoof as the hogback unfolded. The narrow passage through the foundation wall was perfect for defense, but not ideal for fast egress. The claymaster had found a way around that back in the early days, and paid some Hispartan siege engineers to construct his solution. A hinged wooden ramp lolled down from the palisade into the compound's yard. Three powerful barbarians were harnessed to a great vertical axle, which turned a chaos of gears that Jackal had never been able to comprehend. Once the hogs were urged to walk, the hogback split, a second ramp rising up from the first, yawning into the sky until it overtopped the palisade and touched down on the ground beyond, all in a matter of minutes. More than enough time for the gray bastards to marshal in full arms.
"I hate these damn night raids," Rounth complained as he buckled a brace of heavy javelins to his saddle.
"Me too," Fetching said, as she secured a second quiver of thrumbolts to her harness. "No chance to see exactly how few brains you've got when a thick knocks you from the saddle and your skull gets dashed against a rock."
Rounth snorted.
"I won't expect any tears from you, Fetch, you cold lizard."
Jackal ignored the banter. His own gear was already affixed across Hearth's shoulders. Oates bumped him on the shoulder.
"Stop brooding."
"I'm fine," Jackal replied.
"You're not. Your head is still back at that table, pissed off at the chief. Let that go for now, Jackal. We got a fight coming."
"Slop duty." Jackal gnashed his teeth.
"We did the bastards proud today, and slop duty is the reward."
Fetching's head snapped around, fury in her face.
"We?"
Before she could say another word, Jackal jabbed a finger at her.
"Don't you go saying something stupid to the Claymaster on my account. I don't need more shit work because you don't know when it's best to keep silent."
Fetching's neck went tight as further ire boiled up in her face, but her eyes darted to Rounth and Mead, who were close by and watching the little dust-up with interest. Swallowing hard, Fetch jerked her mount to face away from Jackal. All nine sworn members of the Grey Bastards were assembled, even Grocer, his sinewy old root of a body looking odd in full kit. The pair of slop scouts who had spotted the orcs were conversing with Hobnail, likely trying, and failing, to convince him to let them ride with the hoof. Slopheads made good eyes, and the older ones helped patrol the lot, but until they were blooded into the Brotherhood, they did not ride into battle. Jackal had half expected the Claymaster to order him to stay behind as well, but his punishment would have to wait. With orcs on the raid, they could not afford one fewer rider. As the hogback reached its vertical apex, the Claymaster rode into the yard. His twisted back no longer allowed him to sit in a saddle, but he drove a chariot with skill, pulled by a single giant of a hog named Big Pox. Stopping between the ramp and the hoof, the Claymaster faced his riders, his misshapen bulk imposing in the fresh night.
"We got orcs in our lot," he rumbled. "If I gotta say a damn word about how we handle that, you mongrels aren't my hoof. We make for Barayat Hill. Ride out!"
The gray bastards put heel to hog and thundered past their chief. They hit the ramp at speed, crested it, and went charging down the opposite slope. Jackal had both hands in Hearth's mane, keeping his arms loose as the hog surged onto flat ground. Ahead, Hobnail took point, his barbarian kicking up a wake of dust. Jackal and the rest of the hoof spread out into an arrowhead formation, four to a side. Oates, the last rider in the left spur, was behind Jackal. It was always comforting having the brute at his back. Looking to his right, Jackal saw Fetching directly opposite him in the other spur, between Polecat and Hoodwink. She kept her eyes fixed ahead. The Claymaster rode rear guard in his chariot, between the ends of the spurs. Jackal settled into the ride, feeling his stock bow jostle against his back. Ahead of him, Grocer's ropey mass of hair flew in the wind. Behind, the hogback would already have been raised and the slopheads would have manned the palisade, nearly three dozen young half-orcs with spears and shields. The fires would be quickly stoked,
the flues from the great oven opened to flood the wall passage with deadly heat, securing the kiln until the hoof returned, burning wood they could ill afford to lose. Grocer was probably sick with the thought. Jackal would no doubt be hearing him gripe about the waste for the next fortnight while he was penned up within the compound, molding the slops into future riders. But for now, he was out on the plain, borne along by pounding hooves, hunting the enemy. An old saying still existed from the days of the incursion. The orcs have the power to conquer the world, but to do it, they will have to walk. Jackal reckoned it was true on both accounts. The Fix had no affinity with animals. Every living beast responded to them like the predators they were, and so the orcs knew nothing of husbandry, or taming, or domestication. It was their sole disadvantage. Cunning, vicious, dreadfully strong, and unnaturally tough, orcs were terrible foes. They were three times as strong as a man, and twice as fast. The Hispartans learned early in their battles with the Fix that infantry was useless. Only mounted warriors had a chance of victory against an orc force of equal numbers. The nobility of Hisparta had brought half-orcs and hogs together as servants for the war, but it was the Fix who inadvertently formed the first hoof. During one of countless inconsequential battles, the orcs broke the Hispartan cavalry and the frails routed, abandoning their baggage train to be slaughtered. The half-orc slaves took up what arms they could and threw the yokes off the barbarians. The hogs became their mounts, and they charged the orc horde. The barbarians endured wounds that would have felled a horse, and delivered their share of injury with their sweeping tusks. Even ill-equipped and untrained, the half-orc slaves were stronger than any human and every bit as ferocious as the Fix. Their natural prowess gave the Hispartans time to rally, and the orc lines were shattered. The Claymaster had been at that battle, as had every original member of the Grey Bastards, most now dead. They proved their worth as more than slaves that day. They could do more for the war than serve as drovers and potters and grave diggers. Even the pompous human nobles could not fail to see the power of the mounted half-orc. And soon, all mongrel slaves were given a chance to fight for the crown. The end of the orc incursion saw the eventual freedom of all half-orcs in Uwundulas. But more important to Jackal's way of thinking, it saw the establishment of the Lotlands. After years of bitter fighting and the toll taken by the plague that effectively ended the war, the southern half of the country had been left all but abandoned. Hisparta had neither the stomach nor the numbers to resettle Uwundulas, so they allowed their allies to draw lots and gifted great parcels of land to those willing to defend them against further aggression from the orcs. Bringing swift, brutal resistance to thick raids was the purpose of the Grey Bastards. And the Fangs of Our Fathers, the Cauldron Brotherhood, the Orcstains, the Sons of Perdition, and all the rest. It was Jackal's purpose, blood to balls. Barayat Hill stood near the southeastern border of the Bastard's lot, nearly 20 miles from the kiln. After a full day's travel from the brothel with little rest, Harth was far from fresh, but the hog punished the ground, keeping pace with the group without any signs of flagging. Jackal rubbed him proudly on the shoulder. The hoof reached Barayat. The hill was a sullen formation of exposed rock. Much of the soil around it had eroded, but stubborn shrubbery somehow thrived within the cracks of the rocks. Like all of his fellow riders, Jackal's vision was sharp at night, a gift from whatever Thick had raped his human mother. As the hill came into view, he spied no movement upon the rocks, and no band of orcs on the plain below. Fix raided in small bands called Ulyud, the orc word for hand, and each was led by a Tuhuruk, the arm. The scouts had reported 2 full Ulyud in the area, meaning 12 orcs. From the point of the arrowhead, Hobnail slowed the formation, swinging south to circle around Batayat. The hill covered a broad expanse, and Jackal did not like their reduced pace, with the dark rocks so close at their left. The average orc was nearly 7 feet of bulging thews, allowing them to move at daunting speed. From a dead stop, they were swifter than any mount, able to sprint forward and close in before a horse or hog could gain enough distance to outpace them. The key to survival was to keep moving. Jackal reached down behind his hip, gripped the bridle of his stock bow, and slung it around. As Hearth continued to trot, Jackal held his seat with his legs and yanked back on the bowstring until it settled into the pawl. Another advantage of orc blood. A human would have needed a windlass to pull back on the metal prods of such a heavy stock bow. Reaching into the quiver at his belt, Jackal drew a bolt and loaded the thrum. He returned his left hand to Hearth's mane, while his right held the weapon at the ready. All around him, the other bastards did the same. Rounding the southern edge of the hill, the hoof struck east and swept the rocks for a sign. Nothing. Jackal bit back a curse. If the Fix had seen them coming and sheltered atop Batayat, the bastards would be facing a battle they could not win. The hogs would be of little use amongst the rocks, and fighting orcs on foot without superior numbers was a sure way to see every member of the hoof feeding the flies by morning. As the formation came around the eastern slopes and turned north, Jackal grinned. "There you are," he whispered. The hoof had just crested a rise at Batayat's feet, giving them a good vantage of the orcs, not a half-mile distant. The two Ulyud were running across the rough plain below the hill, headed north, their backs turned to the bastards, unaware of their presence. Had they known they were being pursued, they would have turned and charged, or taken up a position in the rocks. Fix did not flee. Hobnail kicked his hog forward. The hoof followed. Hearth plunged down the slope, and Jackal clung to his bristles with one hand. His eyes darted from the orcs to Hobnail, waiting to see what he chose to do. In a fight, the hoof followed the point rider. Jackal's mind ran faster than his hog. There was no hope of felling 12 orcs in one charge. The Ulyud ran beside one another, but there was a gap between them big enough for the hoof to pass through if they tightened the arrowhead. This would allow them to let loose on both bands, each spur sending their thrum bolts into the closest group. But the leftmost Ulyud could make a dash for the rocks before the hoof could wheel for another pass. Hobnail saw the risk and aimed the formation directly at them. Jackal approved. Hob was going to lead them in a tusker, a ride through intended to shatter the 6 orcs in one brutal charge. It was a bold move and the right decision, but if the charge stalled, it would expose the right spur of the arrowhead to a counterattack from the other Ulyud. The Claymaster, too, in his slower chariot, was vulnerable. Jackal shot a quick look over at Fetching, riding in the right spur. Her teeth were bared in gleeful anticipation of bloodshed. The orcs caught scent of them and turned just before they were within thrum range. All 6 were bald, pitch-skinned in the darkness. Their heavily muscled bodies were clad in kilts of animal hide and sleeveless hauberks of mail. Heavy iron plates, festooned with thick spikes, protected them at stomach, knee, and forearm. Most brandished the heavy scimitars favored by orcs, though 2 wielded broad-headed spears. The Tahurruk, the leader, was always the largest, fiercest orc. Jackal watched as he bellowed quick commands at his Ulyud, waving his great blade. The orcs spread out quickly, forcing the bastards to widen their arrowhead. Jackal hoped the riders on the right spur were keeping one eye on the other Fix, lest they be taken in the flank. The hogs tore across the plain and closed the distance. Hobnail took his shot. The string from the stock bow thrummed deeply, quickly followed by shots from Raunth and Mead. Jackal did not see if their bolts found a mark, focusing his own aim on one of the spear-wielding orcs. The furious squeals of hogs filled the air as the tip of the formation met the orcs. Just ahead of Jackal, Grocer thundered toward the Tahurruk, letting a bolt fly. The shot went wide, and the orc leader rolled, coming to his feet between the spurs of the formation. He issued a guttural, undulating war cry and raised his massive scimitar. Jackal quickly changed his target and swung his stockbow to the right, squeezing the tickler just before he drew even with the thick chieftain. The bolt took the orc in the belly, but snapped against his iron gut plate. Jackal pulled his hand out of Hearth's mane and gripped the hog's left swine yanker, pulling down hard. The barbarian's head dipped, and he veered just as the Tahurruk swung his curved blade. The stroke hissed through empty air as Jackal rode past. Releasing his grip on his stockbow and allowing the weapon to fall to the end of its strap across his body, Jackal snatched a javelin from his saddle. Another Thick was ahead of him, raising his spear to cast at Grocer's passing hog. Jackal threw first. The javelin sunk into the orc's exposed armpit, arresting his attack, but the brute kept his feet. Jackal guided Hearth straight toward the Thick, and the hog whipped his head sideways, goring the orc with a swipe of his tusk. Ripped off his feet from the force of the blow, the orc tumbled bloody to the ground. Jackal was now past the Ulyud, but he heard the sounds of squealing hogs and thrumming stockbows behind him as Oats, Hoodwink, and the Claymaster gave the Thicks a taste of the rear guard. Hobnail steered his hog to the right, leading the hoof to wheel around for another charge. While Hearth slowed as he made the turn, Jackal retrieved his stockbow, using his legs to stay in the saddle as he reloaded. Once the weapon was ready, Jackal made a quick count. 10 hogs, 10 riders, all had made it through. With no more need for stealth and the thrill of battle blazing in his chest, Jackal opened his mouth and let loose the hoof's war cry. "Live in the saddle! Die on the hog!" The gray bastards responded as one. The formation came around and straightened the path of their mounts for another charge. The orcs were closing ranks, the untouched Ulyud rushing to join up with their bloodied brethren. Only 2 Thicks lay unmoving upon the ground. A third, the one Hearth had struck, was on his knees, but still alive and clutching his spear. "Hells, these fucks are hard to kill," Jackal told his hog. The Tahurruks were still standing and formed up next to each other, blending their war bands into a single force of 10. The numbers were now even, but the orcs were prepared and eager to spill blood. As the hoof pounded toward the Thicks, Hobnail raised an arm straight up, then quickly hooked his elbow over his head, pointing his fist to the left. Jackal grimaced. A shank shot? Had Hob lost his mind? The maneuver was nothing but a harrowing action, requiring the riders to turn sharply just before reaching the orcs, the spurs of the arrowhead interweaving into a single line while the riders let loose with their stockbows. It slowed the hoof considerably and would never kill all the orcs in one pass. The bastards would be lucky if the Thicks didn't break for Badayat Hill while they turned. Now that the Ulyud were joined, they likely would, and then it was a bolder hunt. Hob needed to order another tusker, or send a left spur around the orcs ahead of the right, whittle at them with a scorpion's jest or a viper tongue. While Jackal clenched his jaw in frustration, Hobnail stuck to his signal and jerked his hog left, leveling his thrum to the right and sending a bolt into the orcs. Rounth and Mead followed seamlessly, guiding their barbarians from running side by side to single file as they turned. Jackal saw at least 1 Thick fall. Grocer and Polecat were next. As they made ready to turn, one of the Tahurruks roared in fury and darted forward. The Thicks followed him. Desperate to get out of their path, Grocer missed his shot, and Polecat didn't even have time to loose a bolt. Jackal was now riding directly beside Fetching, the pair of them making headlong for the charging orcs. Her voice filled his right ear, yelling over the rushing air, savagely elated.
Fuck this shanking shit! Another Tusker, Jack?
Right down their throats,
he agreed, and pulled the trigger of his stock bow. The bolt sped over Harth's head and struck an orc in the arm. Fetch's bow thrummed, and a thick fell with a shaft in his neck. Jackal had just enough time to drop his stock bow and tear his tulwar from its sheath before Harth crashed amongst the orcs, the hog's tusks rending one thick's leg as he barreled through. Slashing left and right as he passed, Jackal felt his arm vibrate with the impact of his blade on orc armor. One of the Tuhuruks sprang at him, its scimitar held high in both hands. A javelin screamed over Jackal's shoulder and hit the orc chieftain in the chest, tearing through his mail and striking with such force it knocked the brute backward. Oats. Jackal issued a silent thanks that his big friend had followed him into the press. He only hoped Hoodwink and the Claymaster had shown equal balls. To Jackal's right, Fetch laughed as her dripping tulwar took an orc's hand off. Only one thick lay between Jackal and open plain, the injured one with the spear. In a display of unnerving vitality, the orc dragged himself to his feet, ignoring the gaping wound Harth had left in his thigh. Jackal swung his tulwar in a sideways arc as he passed, shearing through the orc's spear shaft and slicing into his collarbone. Grunting, the orc collapsed, and Harth emerged from the battle. As his hog continued to put distance between him and the orcs, Jackal turned in the saddle. Fetching had won through, Oaks and Hoodwink not far behind. Hood looked unsteady in the saddle, and as he rode closer, Jackal saw he was clutching a seeping wound on his shoulder. Farther back, Jackal saw the twice-wounded orc with the shattered spear was again regaining his feet. But Big Pox charged right over him, trampling him beneath his hooves and the wheels of the chariot, as the Claymaster drove out of the melee. Jackal and the others reined up a safe distance from the fix and waited on the Claymaster to reach them. Four fix were still on their feet, rallying around the single surviving Tuhuruk. All of them appeared injured. Hobnail and the rest of the gray bastards had now wheeled back around and were preparing another charge. To Jackal's surprise, the Claymaster reached for the warhorn affixed to his chariot and blew three short bursts, the call to regroup. "Chief," Jackal said, "we could hit them from two sides and finish this." The Claymaster shook his head.
"No, we're going home."
Jackal could not help but throw a gawking look at Oates.
"What are you looking at him for?" the Claymaster demanded. "Was I fucking unclear?"
"No, Claymaster," Jackal replied. "But if those sticks reach the rocks and hole up, we risk all going in after them."
"Did your skull get thumped back there, boy? I didn't say anything about going in after them. I said we are going back to the kiln."
"And leave Fix alive in our lot?" Fetching asked,
trying and failing to keep the challenge from her voice. The Claymaster turned his large frame slowly to face Fetch.
"I'm going to explain something to you. And if I am still explaining it when the rest of the boys get here, I ain't gonna be pleased."
The Claymaster put a cruel emphasis on the word boys as he kept his hard stare on Fetching.
"Not a one of those orcs ain't wounded. They came with two hands, two arms. They're leaving with an arm and four fingers. Fix don't choose their numbers randomly. Whatever they came to do, they won't try it now. Let them limp back south and take the tale of their defeat with them. Now, do you want me to give them another tale to take back? About how the leader of the Gray Bastards cut the tongues out of the mouths of two of his own hoof for questioning his orders? Because I have had enough of Jackal's voice today, and honestly, Fetching, if your tongue isn't licking my cock, I got no damn use for it."
Beyond the Claymaster, Jackal watched as the orcs clambered in amongst the rocks of Batayat. He did not say another word, and neither did Fetch. When the others rode up, they seemed equally perplexed at the chief's order, but no further challenges were voiced. The hoof took its time getting back. There was no need to tax their hogs further. Everyone was silent, each rider keeping his eyes open for additional threat while worrying at his private thoughts. Jackal knew his brothers. It would not sit well that they allowed the orcs to escape. The Claymaster was headed quickly toward a vote to remove him from the head of the table. Hells, it was past time. Jackal just had to make sure none of the others beat him to the axe toss. The chief again blew his horn when they were within sight of the kiln, signaling the slops to lower the hog back. The ramp was down by the time the hoof reached the walls, and the hogs crossed over quickly, each one eager for the pens.
"Get the damn ovens doused!"
the Claymaster bellowed at the slops.
"I don't need all our wood burned up over a dozen thicks."
"No, you let it burn up for 7, Jackal muttered, so only Oates heard.
His friend gave him a cautionary frown. After the bastards dismounted, they began leading their hogs to the stables. As they passed the entry gate, Jackal flinched away from the heat still pouring out of the wall passage. It would be hours before it cooled enough to use.
"Forgive me, my friend."
Jackal and the others cursed at the sound of the voice, taking a few startled steps away from the tunnel from which it emerged.
"Who the fuck said that?"
Raumph demanded. Fetching and Hoodwink already had their stockbows pressed hard into their shoulders and trained on the shadowy opening. Jackal shot a look at Oates and raised his own thrum. A figure leaned forward out of the darkness behind the portcullis.
"A 1001 apologies, friends. I did not intend alarm."
It was a half-orc, one Jackal did not recognize. He was fleshy, going to fat, but his face was youthful, bearing a black beard and mustachio, perfectly trimmed. A turban was wrapped about his head, his body clad in the robes of the East. There were many rings upon his pudgy fingers, which casually gripped the iron bars of the portcullis. Those bars, Jackal knew, were too hot to touch. It was difficult for him to even breathe this close to the infernal mouth of the tunnel, but the intruder standing inside it was not even sweating. He regarded the semicircle of pointed stockbows with serene indifference.
"If one would be so kind as to allow me entry," he said pleasantly. "I assure you all, I am merely a humble visitor."
"No, you're not!"
It was the Claymaster who spoke, shouldering his way between Hobnail and Grocer. He took 2 stiff steps toward the gate and stood in the hellish waves of heat as he stared at the turbaned half-orc.
"You're a wizard," the chief said.
There was a smile on his face beneath the bandages. Chapter 4
"What did you do this time, Jack?"
Beryl didn't even look up as Jackal entered the orphanage, keeping her attention focused on the squalling babe she was cleaning. He was never sure how she did that, though she always claimed to know every child she ever raised by smell. All about the long, low-ceilinged room, young half-orcs ran, toddled, crawled, or simply sat. Every one of them was making more noise than a hog in rut.
"Grab Wily before he sticks his hand in the pot," Beryl said calmly, tilting her head slightly over one shoulder.
Looking toward the familiar fireplace, Jackal saw a stout little drooling thing reaching a pudgy hand toward the bubbling porridge pot hung over the low flames. Springing over and around the other children, Jackal managed to reach the child and snatch him up before he learned a hard lesson. The small mongrel giggled as he was hoisted into the air.
"You going soft, Beryl?" Jackal teased, balancing the child on his hip. "Time was you let burning be the reason we didn't go near the hearth."
Lifting the dripping infant out of the wash basin, Beryl shrugged.
"This batch is smarter than you were."
She dried and swaddled the babe with practiced hands
and handed it off to one of the older girls before finally turning to face Jackal, eyeing him up and down. "Well, Claymaster didn't send you here for nothing. Out with it."
Jibes aside, Beryl had not gone soft in the least. Though well past 50, she retained a strong, comely figure, though fuller in the hips and belly than she had been when Jackal was under her care. Her long chestnut locks, tied up in a practical pile, had lost none of their color, and her arms were as sinewy as ever. Half-orc females lose their minds long before their bodies, as was often joked around the hoof when Fetching was out of earshot. Jackal opened his mouth to answer, but before the words came out, the boy he was holding stuck an entire fist in. Careful to keep his teeth from hurting the child, Jackal went on with his explanation, allowing the child's hand to make an incomprehensible mumble out of his speech, not stopping until the little mongrel was belly laughing and Beryl cracked a smile.
"So you're not in trouble," she said. "You're just here to be amongst those your own age."
Lip-chewing on the boy's hand until he laughed harder, Jackal gave Beryl a wink. He turned and looked at the child's chubby face, eyes clenched tight with glee, then expelled the hand from his mouth with an over-exaggerated spitting sound. "Hells," he said, cocking his eyes to look past the boy's lips. "This little slobber has already got his lower fangs." Beryl gave a slow, tired nod.
"Makes me glad my wet nursing days are over. Wiley there is not yet two, and already bigger than most twice his age. Not much hair, but strong, hungry, and, as you said, lower fangs cutting already. I don't envy Thistle. That little beast is at her tit night and day. Reminds me of Oats at that age. Bald, fanged, and breast-crazed."
Jackal smiled. "Not much has changed there." He lowered Wiley down and set him on his unsteady feet. The boy squealed and went toddling off after one of the older children.
"How long you exiled here to Winsome?" Beryl asked, sweeping her gaze across the room in a silent warning to the children that she was still watching them.
"Until the Claymaster says I can ride again."
"Are you really going to let me hear what you did from the bed warmers, Jackal?"
"No," he said. "No, I killed a cavalero at Sancho's, giving him the opening to ask the hoof to start paying for his girls. That only earned me slophead tending. But then I questioned the Claymaster's decision in the field, so here I am." Beryl cocked her head disapprovingly to one side.
"Jackal! He allowed 5 thicks to escape, Beryl. He wasn't thinking clear. None of us could believe the order, but only Fetch and I had the guts to say something."
Beryl threw her arms up at the mention of Fetching's name.
"Still risking yourself for that one. I might have known."
Jackal swallowed a snarl of frustration and kept his voice from rising. "There was no risk. I spoke up first.
We challenged the Claymaster,"
Beryl cut in, her mouth forming a hard line.
"No," Jackal protested. "We just wanted to know why he was letting a bunch of orcs run free in our lot."
Beryl shook her head in that disappointed way Jackal knew as a child.
"He was fighting full-bloods long before you were born, Jack."
"So it's my fault he's lost his taste for it?" Beryl's eyes flashed, and she looked around before taking a step toward him.
"Enough," she said, her tone hushed. "Sissy and Sweeps are right outside hanging linens. What happens when they hike up to the kiln tonight and whisper what you said to Polecat while they're all squirming beneath his blankets? Or one of these little ones repeats what they heard to Thistle? She's still walking home bow-legged most nights from Rounth's bunk. Some of the village girls aren't even bed-warmers, but they're not above letting a slophead have his way every now and again in hopes he'll be a rider soon. You think they don't gossip? What are you going to do when half the hopefuls are whispering that you are making a bid for the hoof?"
Jackal held up a hand to try and stall her tirade, to no effect.
"You won't be ready for the Claymaster's response, and there will be one more empty seat at that voting table." Beryl's voice broke a little at the last, causing Jackal to look away and pretend not to have noticed. After more than 20 years, Warbler's absence still pained her. "Don't worry," he said, watching the children play. "The chief's more interested in filling a seat right now." "One of the slops showing promise?" Beryl asked. "No. We had a stranger show up at the kiln last night, dressed and spoke like he was from Tirkanya or somewhere." "So?" Beryl shrugged. "What makes some dune lover so special?" "Claymaster thinks he's a wizard." Beryl almost succeeded in hiding her surprise. "Is he?" Jackal wrinkled his mouth. The ovens were lit, and there he was, standing in the wall. He should have been cooked, Beryl, and long before he made it all the way to the yard gate.
"Those desert dwellers are accustomed to heat," Beryl said, but even she didn't sound convinced.
Jackal decided not to mention the stranger touching bare flesh to blazing metal. Whatever he is, the chief was giddy as a slophead with his first whore. Never seen him like that. Even Grocer looked disturbed. Beryl folded her arms in front of her.
"The Claymaster's wanted a wizard in the Hoof for as long as I've known him, Jackal. The Castile has one. It said the Tynes practically shit them. But none of the half-breed Hoofs have ever been able to bring sorcery to their tables. If this stranger really is a wizard, it could help the bastards."
She fixed him with a long, studying look.
"But you don't think so?"
"I don't know what to think. The Claymaster was holed up with this creep all night. Only came out long enough this morning to order me down here."
"Well, don't look too crestfallen over it," Beryl said, snatching up one of the damp rags on the table and throwing it at him. "Neither you nor that son of mine visit any more."
Before Jackal could say anything, one of the orphans, a thin little girl, maybe 3, ran up and grabbed his fingers, trying to tow him over to where she was playing.
"Go on," Beryl waved him away. "Let them get used to you being here, and then I'll put you to work."
Jackal spent the morning tussling with the boys and chasing the girls. It was strange to be back in the province of his earliest memories. The orphanage had changed little, the smell of the place an instant reminder of his years under its roof. Winsome was within sight of the kiln's walls, yet Jackal avoided setting foot in the settlement, if at all possible. He had left at 12, walking the mile to the kiln to join the ranks of slopheads and begin his path to the Hoof. Now, 15 years later, he had his own hog and a back covered in gray bastard tattoos. Every last one of the dozen or so boys currently living under Beryl's care would try for the same, but few would succeed. Jackal knew he was a living image of who they were in their dreams. As for the little girls, they were already in love with him, their abandoned hearts knowing nothing of what a father was, but yearning for one all the same. For many, that yearning would mature as they did, turning into a desire to become a bed warmer, a bastard's favorite toss. But today they were all young and blessed with ignorance, girls and boys both, not yet knowing the hard truths to come. As the day drew on, and Jackal played with the children outside, garnering approving looks from Sissy while she hung the wash, he began to understand why he avoided this place. It was not to escape haunted memories. Most of his days at the orphanage had been happy. It was because he did not enjoy facing the unattainable. Jackal would never have children. All male half-orcs were sterile. His father and the fathers of every child in this room was a thick. The seed of the orc was strong, able to take root in humans with ease, and once a woman was impregnated, no amount of herbs or teas could flush it out of her. Some frails killed themselves rather than carry a half-breed. Some endured the 7-month pregnancy and, if they survived the birth, dispatched the babe in whatever way they could stomach. Fortunately for Jackal and every half-orc breathing, some allowed their mongrels to live. The nobility of Hisparatha still prized half-breed servants, and handsome children fetched a high price up north. Within the Lot lands, the half-orc hoofs made it known that all human women willing to rear their own half-breed children were welcome to live under the protection of the hoof. The village of Winsome had sprouted up near the kiln because of this arrangement. And yet, many babes still turned up simply abandoned, their mothers refusing to kill them or sell them or raise them, simply wanting to be rid of them. That was how Jackal and scores of orphans since had come to Beryl. She had come to Winsome from her own pillage town, a thick get already growing inside her, for half-orc females could sometimes conceive. Rarely, human seed would quicken in a half-orc's womb, but most often it was a thick that put a babe in their bellies. A child born from such a pairing was called a thrice-blood, or simply a thrice. Bigger, stronger, and more orcish in appearance than a common half-breed, a thrice was a rare occurrence, and it was even more rare that they were abandoned, for few half-orc women succumbed to that weakness. Beryl certainly had not. She accepted the gray bastard's protection, vowing her thrice-blood babe, if it were a boy, would become a formidable member of the hoof. Half a year later, Oates was born. Beryl raised him alongside the town's foundlings, including an infant who would become her son's closest friend. Jackal looked at the child Beryl had called Wily, and wondered if he was a thrice. The husky monkey was certainly fearless, mingling easily with the older children. He definitely reminded Jackal of Oates, who would have dominated the orphanage if his mother had not kept firm control of him, as she did with all her charges. 4 days passed with no word from the kiln. Beryl kept Jackal busy replacing the broken tiles on her roof, ridding her garden of vipers, and repairing the loose bricks in her chimney. When those tasks did not occupy him, she turned him over to the foundlings, and Jackal soon gave more shoulder rides than he could count. At night, he slept outside beneath the portico, his stock bow close at hand. Winsome had only been threatened once in its history, when a band of centaurs rode through on one of their rampages. Jackal had been about 9, and could still remember huddling in the root cellar with Oates, Fetch, and Beryl, and the other children, as the horse cocks screamed madly nearby. They'd killed 8 people that night, and wounded a score, before the claymaster led the gray bastards down from the kiln and chased them off. Had it been the betrayer moon, the hoof might not have been able to stop them. True to its name, the betrayer could wax on any night, enrapturing the centaurs and sending them out to murder. The dread moon would often go years without showing its face, only to appear twice in as many months. It was said that the centaurs summoned it to align with their mad whims, but who could say for certain? None had ever entered one of the horse-cock's protected groves and returned with an answer. Whatever the cause, the betrayer moon was a lingering fear, a celestial axe that hung invisible above the Lots. Its arrival could not be accurately predicted, save by Zirko, and the little priest had not yet sent warning. Jackal kept his thrum loaded just the same. On his 5th day in Winsome, he finally succumbed to Sissy's come-hither stares and snuck off with her, ducking down the narrow dead-end courtyard between Beryl's and the cooper's workshop. Sissy was a half-orc Jackal had known in the orphanage when they were younger. She had been about 10 when he left, and had grown into a sweet, plain-faced girl with a pleasingly sizable backside. Polecat had been shagging her and another of Beryl's helpers, a frail named Sweeps, but had not yet chosen a favorite. "Cat finds out about this, he is going to want my scalp," Jackal said, as Sissy gnawed eagerly at his neck. He was already shirtless from his chores, and she ceased her mouth's attentions long enough to step back and gaze at his torso, her hands running over his arms.
"Hells, Jackal," she said. "Next to you, he's damn weedy."
Jackal chuckled.
What do you see in that lazy-eyed lech, anyway?
He said it teasingly, making it clear that he bore Polecat no ill will, nor was there any competition between them.
Sissy's wide eyes left his chest and sparkled wetly up at him.
He is just the right amount of rough.
Jackal raised his eyebrows and nodded, affecting a pondering expression. Then he snatched for Sissy without warning, making her gasp and laugh as he seized her around the arms. Spinning her around, he pulled her back against him, and slowly put a hand over her mouth to hush her giggling breaths. She was a good deal shorter than him, but raised up on her toes to rub her backside in just the right spot. Parting her lips, Sissy got her mouth around one of his fingers and bit down, just enough to hurt. One of the Cooper's cast-off barrels was just to Jackal's left. He shoved Sissy over its slightly buckled top, keeping his finger in her mouth. With his free hand, he raised her skirts up over her hips, revealing her sage-colored rump, and hooked a hand behind her knee to raise it up onto the rim of the barrel. Sissy moaned and arched, wordlessly encouraging him as her teeth held his finger fast. Jackal was unlacing his breeches one-handed when the alley of the courtyard darkened. Fetching stood there, little more than a silhouette against the bright sun.
"Jack, we need to talk."
Jackal took a step away from Sissy, who rose from the barrel and threw her skirt down with a frustrated expulsion of breath.
"It couldn't wait half an hour?" she demanded.
Fetching stepped to one side of the alley mouth.
"Get going, Sissy."
Throwing an angry look at Jackal, Sissy hurried out of the courtyard. Fetching leaned away as she passed, as if the other girl's life would rub off on her, drag her back to the station she narrowly avoided. Jackal leaned against the barrel.
"That one gives you too much credit," Fetching said as she approached. "Half an hour?"
Jackal ignored the bait, waiting for Fetch to broach the subject she came to address. She was dust-stained, fresh off her hog. As she came close, Jackal could smell her, the earthy aroma of hard riding mixed with her familiar scent.
"Claymaster tell you how long you gotta stay here?" she asked.
"I was hoping you were about to tell me." Fetching wrinkled her nose.
"No. The chief doesn't talk to me even when he isn't courting some fat conjurer."
"Anything come of that? Who is he?" Fetching rolled her eyes.
"I don't know. Claymaster's had me on patrol since Badiat."
"You came out of it unscathed," Jackal said. "Not even slop duty."
"No," Fetch agreed. "Claymaster doesn't want me around the hopefuls, even as punishment. Figures they'll be too preoccupied with visions of bending me over a barrel."
She kicked at Sissy's former perch, unbalancing Jackal in the process. He stood to keep from falling, bringing him even closer to Fetching. She was just a hair shorter and eyed him boldly.
"Why did you do it? Why did you claim to have killed that cavalero?"
"Because we all had a hand in it. You, me, and Oates. But if the Claymaster knew it was you who pulled the tickler, the punishment would have been worse than slop duty. When it comes to you..." Jackal trailed off, knowing he did not need to explain to Fetch what the Claymaster thought of her.
"No more, Jack. The Hoof is never going to treat me as one of them, so long as you don't."
Jackal wrinkled his face.
"I would have done the same for Oates." "Would you?" Fetching shot back. "That's pretty big of you, considering he had not one word to say out at Badiat. He could have backed us."
"Oates picks his fights carefully, Fetch, which is more than either of us can boast." Fetching held up a hand, giving him the point.
"Then you gotta start letting me deal with the shit that comes from the fights I pick. I don't need your swinging cod getting between me and the Claymaster or any other member of this Hoof. Understand?"
Jackal nodded.
"Say it!"
"I understand." Fetching set her jaw and nodded, her eyes softening slightly. Then she slammed a fist up into his balls. Jackal grunted and bent over double, the sudden dull pain giving way to a foreboding numbness
before the real agony shot upward and lodged in his throat, trailing nausea through his entire body.
"The fuck, Fetch?"
he managed between coughs. "That was a favor," she said, leaning down to put her face level with his.
"A favor?"
"So you'll be too sore to try and spread Sissy's cheeks again. That hussy is looking to make the kiln her permanent home. Soon as you stick that troublemaker in any of her holes, she is going to see a clear path to your bunk."
Jackal tried to glare at her through teary eyes.
"We were both just looking for a break in the drudgery."
"That's what you were doing, half-wit. But she'd throw Polecat over in a heartbeat. Sissy's not about to stay with that weasel-faced pederast if she can get you. So, unless you're ready for a bed-warmer, keep out."
Fetching straightened and began to leave the courtyard, her stock bow bouncing slightly against her lower back.
"And you're welcome."
Jackal hobbled in slow circles for a long time after she was gone. Chapter 5. A slophead came to fetch Jackal back to the kiln after 8 days. The young hopeful was out of breath, as if he had run all the way from the compound. "What's the matter, slop?" Jackal dug. "You can't sprint a mile without getting winded?" The slophead tried to steady his breathing, causing his lips to twitch and his face to pale.
"Hell's Bureau, breathe," Beryl told him from her chair on the portico. "Don't let this one tug your ear. Jackal swooned like a virgin the first time he was made to run back to Winsome with a message. Took me forever to bring him around."
Jackal snorted. Some of his fellow bastards would not have taken kindly to being teased in front of a slophead, but he found Beryl's story amusing, all the more so because it wasn't true. Jackal trimmed a few more artichoke stems with his knife, dropping the heads into the basket between him and Beryl before standing. Sheathing his knife, he picked up his brigand and stock bow. Beryl looked up at him with a tiny smile.
"Good to have you around, Jackal."
He leaned down and kissed her once, then stepped off the portico and into the hot sun. "Let's go," he told Bureau. Nodding rapidly, the slophead spun on his heel and began jogging up the dusty trail that ran through Winsome. Jackal continued at a walk, squinting at the retreating slop, until the youth realized what was happening and turned around.
"The Claymaster said to bring you back quickly," Bureau called back.
"Then he should have sent my damn hog," Jackal replied, not bothering to raise his voice. The foundlings, now aware that he was leaving, came scurrying from their play to surround him, following in a laughing, living cloud, until Beryl's commanding voice called them off. The road to the kiln was mostly uphill in this direction. Jackal took his time, donning his brigand as he walked. Bureau stayed a few paces ahead. The youth was no more than 13, still within his first year as a slophead, and still responding to the sworn members of the hoof with a mix of awe and dread. Fortunately, that also kept him from talking during the walk. As they neared the kiln, Jackal spotted a small encampment squatting near the gate. "When did they arrive?" Jackal asked, peering at the half-dozen horses and tents.
2 days ago," Bureau replied. "They are cavaleros from the Castile."
Jackal almost mocked the slop for the obvious observation, but bit back on the abuse, choosing to educate the boy instead. "They are cavaleros," he agreed. "But can you tell me if they are commoners or nobles?" Bureau stared blankly. Jackal took him by the shoulder as they drew nearer the camp and pointed at the horses, hobbled and grazing on the sparse plain. "Look at the quality of their mounts. Not one is purebred." Two men were standing sentry, while the other four threw dice near their small cook fire. "Noble-born frails rarely gamble with dice," Jackal continued, "and they wear a crimson sash to denote their privilege. These clods don't have that, and their armor is poorer quality. But they are usually the better fighters. Remember that." Bureau gave his rapid nod
and swallowed hard. Walking beneath the gate, Jackal entered the wall passage and began making the long circuit through the darkness. He could hear Biro's hand sliding along the wall behind him. The youth, not yet used to traversing